All right. Our next reader, Zevon Poor, left the wilds of Indiana at the age of 18 for Uncle Sam's Yacht Club, more popularly known as the U.S. Navy. After 6 years of working on and utilizing shipboard and anti-craft missile systems, he left the Navy and, following several twists and turns, settled in the New York City area. Zevon's nonfiction and fiction has appeared in Sybil's Garage, where he is now an assistant editor. When he isn't writing short stories and novels that deal with everything from vampires to magic to the Civil War, he makes his living as a computer consultant and builds highly detailed models of ships most people have never heard of. He currently resides in Hoboken, New Jersey, with his wonderfully talented fiancée, dancer, and choreographer, Kristen Mangione. Please welcome Zevon Poor.
Thank you very much. Excuse me if I grimace, my leg's kind of falling asleep here. Whenever I was asked to read, I suddenly realized how little I have that fits in a 25-minute reading slot. So I've got a couple of very short flash pieces that I'm tired of reading, and I'm sure everybody in the group is tired of hearing. So, and my current novel is Civil War-related, which I didn't really think appropriate for a science fiction reading. So this is something completely new and different, and it's the second or third draft of the first chapter of a new novel, so hopefully it's not too rough. A little context, as David asked for the novel. This is basically the story of magic appearing, or reappearing, if you believe it existed before, in modern America. And we're starting off the story with one of the main characters, probably the antagonist as it develops, who's been waiting for this pretty much his entire life. And as things go along, he's really figuring out that he didn't really know what was going to happen in the first place, and he's going to have to make it up as he goes along. So... here we go. And I really don't have a title, so sorry, I can't give you that. That's way down the road. So, he had a sense of being lost in his own body. One of those instances where one wakes up, doesn't know if they're in a home, in a hotel, in someone else's bed, or in a car. The muted light from the dashboard, low static from the radio, the steady thrum of the wheels told him that he was in a car. He rolled his head to the left, grimaced at the tightness there, gave Madeline behind the wheel a raised eyebrow of questioning. Outside, the countryside rolled by, the world of the night picked out here and there for distinct instants by the headlights, guardrails, houses, and endless stretches of fields. Blinking, yawning, rubbing his eyes, his head flared, telling them he'd been drinking, but that was a lie. Something else had given him this drained, fuzzy, smacked around feeling. One of the last things he remembered was a dusty clock face in the loading bay of a grocery store. He compared that time to that on the dashboard's clock and figured he'd been out for maybe 2 hours. They should still be in Ohio then. Walter shifted his body around and propped himself up against the passenger door. He didn't feel like sitting upright, not yet ready to take on gravity on its own terms. "Where are we?" Walter asked, ran his hand over his face. It was always good to have a rough idea of where you were, what was going on. But right now, Walter needed things in exact values. He couldn't have uncertainty, not with all that was going on. Madeline glanced at him, black eyes flecked with light from the dash, and nodded down the road. An iridescent green road sign grew in the distance. Pittsburgh in 75 miles, he read aloud. "We're stopping just this side of there," he said, glad he'd awakened when he did. Would she have woke him to ask him where they were going, or just continued on east until the dawn came and the gas ran out? She nodded, kept her eyes forward and on the road. "What happened back there?" Walter asked as he sat fully upright, massaged his shoulder, and smelled cigarette smoke from somewhere in the past. And then he cocked his head and frowned. What exactly had happened back there? He knew the clock on the wall, remembered the loading bay at the supermarket. There had been a man, the sense of a cold concrete floor under his palms. Had he fallen? Passed out? Obviously he'd passed out. But if he had, surely Madeline hadn't been able to. "You didn't carry me out of there, did you?" Walter asked. He pushed harder into his memory, called up the shouts, a flash of light, a leaded thump like a bag of rice hitting the floor. It had been a grocery store, after all. But the rest was missing. Madeline shrugged, stayed silent, hands at 10-2 on the steering wheel. "Hey!" he shouted and punched the dashboard. She flinched only slightly. Someone who didn't know her body language would have missed it. "Talk to me." I didn't know you were paying me to talk, Madeline said, in that sort of Puerto Rican mixed with every other language accent she had. Her hair down her shoulders was the darkest thing on the earth at that moment. I'm not, Walter said, and recoiled in himself a bit. But I want you to tell me what happened. She sucked air between her teeth and pursed her lips. I'd like you to do the same, she said. I did my part, she continued, the consummate professional, never going into details. And at the end you walked over and touched him. There was... She paused there, shifted in her seat. Her eyes darted over to him and then back on the road ahead. She was actually nervous. She'd come to Mexico, talked him out of a local jail, got him across the border and back into the United States, and he'd never seen her nervous before. A light, she continued. Like a camera flash, but brighter. Maybe one of the overhead fixtures blew, she said, reasoned. Walter shivered. Her mention of the light had jolted his brain, sent a tingle through his fingers, and brought it all back. It shone up at the supermarket just after midnight. Madeline picked the lock of the loading dock of the supermarket, walked up behind the man that needed to be taken out of the equation. A boy, really. He turned at her approach, dropped the bag of flour in his hand, and then Madeline had gone to him at Walter's nod. But the man hadn't been looking at her, at the thin tan woman with the knife advancing on him. He and Walter had locked eyes, and the man had mouthed something right as Madeline took him. He remembered it all up until then, nothing after. She said he touched him, and there was this thing with his head. The only way a light fixture blowing could have made him feel like this was if it had literally fallen on his head. There was only one other explanation. Sam had been his name, late of the overnight stocking shift. He was still alive then, Walter asked. When I touched him? Yes, she said, barely, on his way out. Walter held up his right hand and inspected the fingers. They left in stark relief as they passed under a light for the exit to Zanesville, Ohio. He hadn't known he could take it from them. He smelled his hand. Slight smell of ozone, almost indiscernible over the cigarette smoke. It made sense. Power was historically transferable through elections, wars, bank accounts, things like that. Why not this power? Thanks for dragging me out, he said, no longer embarrassed, however you did it. That's the sort of thing you do pay me for, she said. They drove straight through the night, found a location, and drove past it twice before deciding to park further down the road to avoid the crowded field that served as a huge parking lot, now ruddy and mudded. Two half-awake teenagers in rain parkas stood by a gate with a sign that read, Parking, $10 a day, and mumbled weak welcomes to them as they walked through. Beyond the field stood a line of trees, beyond which they could make out tents amid amplified voices and music. Above, the sky was torn. Above, the sky wore the texture and color of shredded lead, clouds that had already soaked the ground once today and threatened to do it again at any moment. Some of the cars had parked recently, their engines ticking as they cooled. They walked through the area where cars gave way to ticket takers and people handing out programs. Just the other side, a large puddle that could have passed for a pond at some parts back in Queens. His boots sucked at the muddy ground, and Madeline cursed quietly, wanting to know how civilized people could live without sidewalks. He couldn't help it that it had been a music festival that had drawn him in. Not the festival specifically, but a woman among the thousands now among the tents before them. Wherever she was, he would have had to come. Do we have a name this time? Madeline asked. No, Walter said. She looked about with eyes and opened her hands about her. We're out in the middle of hundreds of people in broad daylight, she said, and you have no idea who we're looking for. Leave it to me, he said. I've got this. Nice of you to keep me informed of your plans, she said, put her hands in her jeans pockets and followed along. He would have let her in on the plan if he had one. Truth be told, he was flying on instinct at this point, pushed along by circumstances much like the chattering flock of birds that were now scudding overhead, blown by a damp gust of wind that bent the trees. The grocery store had been easy. He'd just called up and asked who was working the night shift. That's all he'd known then and now, a place and a time, and that he would know when he saw him. This time he had the sense it would be a woman, which would be a first. His fingers still tingled, the flash of light still echoed in his memory, and he knew to go that way, towards the dome structure off to their right, through a myriad of people and tents. It was good enough for him. He held up his hand, studied the hair and veins like they were the map of the future. Let me guess, Madeline said. You're never going to wash that hand again, right? Completely deadpan. Was that a joke? He asked. Onward they went through the growing crowd. The others parted for them, and Walter knew it was not because they looked out of place in their dark clothes and jeans, leather and black, but because they had a purpose, walking assuredly, and the people opened for them, like a crowd would open for men of purpose on the jammed sidewalk in Manhattan. And then they were among the tents, booksellers, CD and vinyl stalls blasting music, and t-shirts with images from skeletal masks to demons, and others that bore crosses and proclaimed, "There is none higher." Walter felt it now, a definite pull within. A dome structure in the distance resolved into a stage, like something someone's filling a budget version of the Woodstock concert. No music, but there was activity on it, and he felt compelled, pulled, destined to walk onto that stage. "There," he said and pointed. Madeline came up beside him. "You're not going to like this," he said and chuckled. She pursed her lips and sucked air between her teeth again, scanned the area. "Nowhere to go," she said, obviously running scenarios in her mind. "Maybe I could lure someone into a porta potty, and even if I did, the cleanup? It's not happening." She shook her head. "No." "You're telling me no?" he asked. "Smile? That's not how it works. I pay the money, you do the deeds." Her eyes burned into him, and even though he felt weak for it, he looked away for a moment. "Relax," he said. It was probably unwise to tease someone he knew to be armed and dangerous and possibly sociopathic, but she was so at his request, and besides, he enjoyed it too much. "I think maybe I'm only supposed to talk to this one," he said, and at the sound of his own words, he became certain that was it. To talk. See where it went. "We," he paused, considered his next words carefully, "we may have been going about this all wrong so far." She raised an eyebrow and a "you got to be kidding me" look, surveyed the area again, moving her entire head like a hawk. "Too many people," she said, "even to talk. There are cameras, camera phones, video recorders. There are people who know what you look like." "Cameras?" he asked. He hadn't even considered that before. "What about the gas station?" "And I took care of them," she said. "Another one of those things you pay me for. But here, too many. The isolated security types." "Too many and not the isolated security types. People have cell phones, laptops, local television stations. Too many eyes." Walter considered. There were those who knew what he had looked like and would love nothing better than to talk to the only living son of the man whose commune had gone up in smoke and gunfire nearly 30 years prior. Walter nodded. "It'll be fine. Trust me," he said. It may be risky, but it was supposed to happen. He knew that. He could feel it. Maybe he really would just talk to her. And if anyone really was looking for him, they only had photos of him as a boy to go on. Walter set off for the stage, past a line of food stands selling burgers, funnel cakes, and beer. Madeline followed. Walter topped the metal stairway at stage right and stopped. Seeming chaos before him as people ran here and there, but it quickly became obvious that one person orchestrated it all. The woman answered questions, gave directions. She placed a microphone stand, oversaw a drummer behind her as he tested his drum kit, watched roadies set up mics and put tape on the stage. All the while, they glanced to the west at the still darkening sky of wind-whipped clouds. And it was that woman he sought. He could feel it, like the hand of a compass pointing him towards her, even pulling him along. And it was a pulling, not a push from behind, but something tied into the center of him and tugging him forward. The compulsion was not from without, but from within. He took a step, stopped, and looked back at Madeline, still at the foot of the stairs near a jumble of cables and crates. She had her arms crossed, one hand inside the left of her jacket, and though she covered it well, Walter knew what her fingers rested on. He shook his head and she dropped her hands to her side, then folded them before her, then fidgeted some more. A growing crowd milled before the stage, gathering here and there, some sitting in the metal folding chairs, then looking at the threatening sky and thinking better of it. "If I can have everyone's attention..." Susan spoke into the microphone, cringed at the feedback of the company her testing 1, 2, 3. Walter suddenly knew that her name was Susan somehow. He thought it odd that he could know that, but wondered if it was really any odder than knowing that he was to be at that place at that time and to find a woman, some woman he'd never seen before, and that maybe it was all insane. There was nothing that told him what he was doing, seeking out those that knew, even if they didn't realize it, that made any sense at all. Except for Chris from the supermarket. He remembered now. The man, right before Madeline had killed him, he'd mouthed the words, "You know too," right before he crumpled to the floor. Another flash now, in the distance behind a black cloud that drew the attention of many in the crowd. The wind kicked up and Walter could smell the rain on it. Only a matter of time now. More feedback screamed through the speakers and then her voice came through, crystal. Yes, that's what I'm talking about, Susan said, amplified, and chuckled nervously into the mic. We had, of course, planned to have the first act go on at the top of the hour, and she paused and looked at her watch. 20 minutes. But if the good Lord decides we need a light show first, she pointed to the west as thunder rolled over them, muted but vibrating into their bones, telling of the true power of the light that had created it. Then, of course, we'll have to delay. Muted applause rose from the crowd and was all lost in another flash and almost immediate roll of thunder. Footsteps on the aluminum stairs, and Madeline was at his side. He realized he had been standing there, dumbly, his hands shaking at his side so that he dug into the legs of his jeans with his nails now to steady them. Is it her? She asked. Walter nodded and licked his lips. He turned to her, and Madeline's eyes narrowed. What's wrong? She asked. No idea, Walter said. No idea what to do. Kind of making this up as I go along. Heavy drops of rain started to fall, loud upon the ground and stage, so loud that at first Walter thought they were hailstones. Should I? She asked. He shook his head. We can come back later, she said. Better weather, fewer people. But the last of her words trailed off as his feet moved of their own accord. Stagehand came up to him as he approached Susan. Walter raised his hand, and the man stepped aside, so there had been no problem at all in the first place. Walter, Madeline called, but he didn't listen. Just going to talk, he said, whispered. He could feel those eyes, and maybe a camera or two as well, as he stopped next to Susan. The crowd was dispersing, but some stayed, watched, as if they knew. Susan collapsed the microphone stand and crouched slightly, as if it would keep the now steady rain from hitting her. She laughed, got the microphone out, and nearly tumbled to the stage with it, and then stood and made to hand it to Walter. Here, she said, and then, oh, I thought you were Bobby, the sound guy. No, Walter said, and their eyes locked on each other. The rain poured down around them, as all-encompassing as a pool, their clothing soaked, her black bra visible through her yellow t-shirt, water sputtering up Walter's nose with every breath. Another flash of lightning and a crack of thunder so near as to interrupt his breathing, and the rain came harder, smudging all around them in the vague sketches of the world, everything viewed through the prism of water. You know, the woman named Susan whispered, and her eyes went wide. From anyone else, it would have been stated as a question, and Walter would have taken it as much, but now he did know. Yes, he said, I do know. He smiled. Smiled so wide that his jaw muscles began to hurt, and so wide that she joined him in it. And she began to laugh as he raised his hand, which now tingles as if he'd fallen asleep on them, and they struggled to awaken. They were afire with pain, heavy and awkward, but they worked well enough to touch Susan on either side of her blonde curls, now almost straight with the driving rain. And then there was a flash, a scream from Susan, screams from the crowd, a moan from him as fire shot through his fingers and up his arms and into his heart and head, and a tearing of the heavens that came out as thunder that threatened to deafen him with its ferocity. And then it all fell to silence and nothingness. He was lost again, coming to, up through blackness and water, thunder still in the distance but now fading, now muted through walls and windows. He was on a bed, naked, the lights out, twilight seeping through pooled curtains like water through an oversoaked sponge. The world was shadows. Television flickered, right light reflected off the doorknob, the mirror on the bathroom door, and the chrome and wood coat hangers that hung in the open closet, some of them holding his wet and dripping clothes. On the bed next to his, sitting cross-legged and with her television remote in her hand, Madeline stared at the television. Thank you, Walter said. His voice cracked, throat burned, and head swam. She didn't turn to look at him, simply nodded. He pulled the sheet up over himself. So, you've seen me naked, he said in an attempt at humor, but he couldn't even force a laugh through the pain in his chest. Silence. Not talking again? She turned up the television's volume, stood, said she was going to the bar, then tossed the remote under the bed next to him, and walked out the room. The door closed on her heavy footsteps and the sound of rain dribbling out of a downspout. On the television, a red scrawl ran across the screen beneath a generic orange graphic of a lightning bolt. Scrawl warned of severe storms and a tornado warning to the north, as the newscaster spoke. The local awakening festival turned tragic today when event coordinator Susan Berylson was struck by lightning. Miss Berylson was pronounced dead at Pittsburgh General upon arrival. Authorities and medical professionals are now on the lookout for a man who was apparently struck at the same time. The newscaster's face faded from view and the bulk of the screen came up grainy video. Amateur home video shows an unknown man talking with Susan at the time of the strike. In the shaking footage, Walter walked across the stage, touched her, then in a blinding flash, the video went as black as Walter's vision had. If anyone has any knowledge of this man's whereabouts, you are asked to contact medical help and authorities immediately. Walter turned off the television and let the room fall into darkness, muted twilight giving away to lights in the parking lot in the hotel. He wondered if it mattered. Could anybody identify him from that footage? Who would have been looking for him before now anyway? His father had been the one they were interested in. Him and his commune cult down in Mexico. History had forgotten him, put him in a file with Koresh and Jones, then moved on. They didn't know about Walter and what his father had given him. As he lay there, he wondered how much of this he was going to have to do on his own now, how much improvisation there would be. Not that the memories of his father had told him decades before was a solid blueprint or anything, but it had been something. He also wondered why Madeline hadn't gone to the bar, she said, but sat in the car smoking her second cigarette since she had left the room. How he knew she felt marginalized, left out, angry. He marveled at that. How could he possibly know that? His body ached, but he stood, opened the shades, saw her silhouette behind the wheel of the car and the glowing tip of her cigarette. Satisfied, he fell back into the bed, smiled so widely that once again his jaw ached from it, and he fell into the deep sleep of the exhausted.
Thank you.